Hello and welcome to The Leap of Faith. Tonight for our final programme in the current series, I'm joined by Elmo Walsh, whose son Donal died from cancer at just 16 years of age. Just a few weeks before he died, Donal Walsh made one brief television appearance which would have the most profound effect upon the entire country, but most particularly upon the lives of our young people. Facing death at such a young age, Donal had a message which was simple and true. Life is precious, so don't waste it and give it everything you've got. He spoke candidly about suicide, reminding young people that however bad things may feel, there's always help out there and suicide should never be an option.
I see all the good support that I'm getting in life and I see all the good things around me in life that I'm going to be leaving behind, kind of. I don't see just negative. I'm not looking for... Obviously, no one will be looking forward to dying, but I'm not thinking about that. I'm thinking if there is anything negative, it's all the beautiful things I'm leaving behind.
It's 5 years now since his death, when the lives of his mother, Elma, father Finbar and sister Gemma were left completely shattered. But just like Donal, his family have a resilience which seems to show no bounds. Elma, for people who don't know Donal's story, what is it?
Well, Donal was a boy of 16. He had gone through cancer from when he was 12 years old. He was cleared twice of cancer and at 16 he was diagnosed terminal. And he's from Tralee, he's from County Kerry, a proud Kerry young boy. And when he was 15, he got lung cancer. And he fought that again and he got the all clear in June. And in the July and August of that year, there were suicides locally in Kerry, which was very high numbers in Kerry at that time. And he was at the funeral of one of those suicides. And he came home to me and I always remember that he was standing in the kitchen and he said, "Mom," he said, "I can understand how the parents would be upset, but," he said, "Mom, you should have just seen the faces of the grandparents." And that's what really troubled him, was the faces of the grandparents. But little did he know that 2 months later he'd be diagnosed terminal. He would have no choice in dying. And he felt that other people, maybe if they got a little help, if they were intervened in early and got a little help, if they spoke to somebody, just maybe they might be alive today. Maybe they mightn't have had to put their family through all the trauma that they had to go through. And that's what troubled him really, really deeply after he was diagnosed terminal. So, unknown to any of us at home, he wrote 2 letters. And he wanted those letters published after he died. But he won an award. His English teacher, Rory O'Rahilly, entered him in a competition for a composition that he had written earlier on in the year in school, before he gave up school. And that composition won the award. So when they came to the house that day, the journalist said, "You know, Donal, you have a great way with words. Have you written anything else?" And Donal was very shy to show them the letters. But he did. I encouraged him, a bit of mother's encouragement. And he showed him the letters, and that's what was published the following day in Kerry's Eye and Radio Kerry. And from there, the Brendan O'Connor show picked up on it, and he was asked on to the show the following week. And that's how it all happened.
All right, Donal?
Yeah, perfect.
Good. Looking good.
I just didn't want them to see suicide as a solution to any of life's problems. It hurts me to see them think about it, to see it among their friends. But it kills me because I'm here fighting for my life for the third time. I've no say in anything. And I'm still here waking up every day. And then they think that they have a problem and this might be a solution. That does make me angry and I'm not going to lie about it. But I've nothing against people with mental illness or anything like that. These people have to realise that there is help.
And 19 minutes of television were to have a profound impact.
An amazing impact. To think that 5 years later, we're still being asked to go to schools. We've never asked to go to a school or a church or a town hall or a club or anything like that. And yet we've spoken in over 1,000 different venues to date. Finbar tries to do a Monday because that's his day off. And I work 3 days a week in an accountancy office in Tralee, and I do Thursdays and Fridays. So we try and keep it to those days that we're off and keep our weekends free. it's just phenomenal that it's still going, and the response, and I suppose like young people today that we're going to speak to, they're all TY students, and they'd have been 10, 11, 12 years old 5 years ago. So you'd wonder, like, they didn't hear him 5 years ago. So you'd wonder, why would he have an impact on them today? And it's an always a positive impact. You know, I've never had a problem in any of the schools that I've gone to throughout the country. I've gone to schools in England. I've gone to schools all over Ireland, Northern Ireland, Southern Ireland. And I've never, ever had an issue with a student or anything like that, that they didn't pay attention or listen or anything like that. They showed absolute utmost respect.
The clip of that interview is widely seen. It's on YouTube. It's on the RT player as well. But in that clip, you can see yourself and your husband as well watching him as he's talking. And I think you describe being aware, as his mother, about the sheer authenticity and the clarity with which he spoke once he started.
Yeah, once he started, it was like something kind of... it was kind of undescribable. Like, nothing was planned for that interview. There was no conversation had before it, or what would I say, or what will I do, or anything like that. If anything, the biggest fear he had was the clothes he was wearing and the kit that he had, and was did he look good enough, was mostly, I suppose, his worry before he went on. But he knew he had a message. He just, when he got the invitation, firstly, to be honest with you, I said no initially. And I felt very guilty then on the Sunday, and I said, oh God, maybe I should have given them the choice of saying yes or no, because it was his time. And so I did, and he said, yeah, Mom, he said, maybe this is what's meant to be, maybe this is what I'm meant to do. And he, against all doctor's advice and everything, we got the plane to Dublin, and we had an ambulance on standby outside the studio, and, you know, Donald's dying wish was to die at home in Kerry, so we had arranged, if anything happened in Dublin, that he'd get home very, very fast. Thankfully it didn't. He was able to enjoy it and enjoy that night. And it's just that he had a message to give. I don't think he knew how it was going to become out, how it was going to come out, or the reaction. We certainly had no idea of the reaction. Never in a million years would we have believed the reaction that we got. We got letters from all over the world and all age groups. And like, he meant his message for teenagers. He wasn't talking to adults that night, really. He was talking to teenagers. And, you know, I have letters at home from people of all age groups and all walks of life, and the impact that he had on them that night.
Where did he get the strength from? Because I think he cried once, is my understanding, at the beginning, and that was it. Mm-hmm. He wasn't having any more of it.
Well, I'm often asked that question in schools, and the only thing that I can put it down to is that I asked him the very same question. I said, Donal, I said, how come you're not more upset? Because I was devastated. And he said, Mom, think about it. He said, think of all the children that died in Crumlin before me. I'm no more special than any of them, so why not me? And then he made me make two promises when he was diagnosed terminal. One was that he'd receive Holy Communion every day, and the other was that he'd get dressed and out of bed every day and go somewhere. He didn't want to be dwelling on cancer. He didn't want what was left of his life to be dictated by cancer. Even though he was dying of cancer, he didn't want to spend his time saying, oh, woe is me, and all this type of thing, you know. He wanted to get out, get dressed and go somewhere every day. And he did. He got the fake ID made. He made the most of it, believe you me. We had the house parties and everything. So he got to do an awful lot. And I have to thank some people as well, but to the generosity of complete strangers at the time to us who are now our friends, he got the chance of driving a Ferrari and helicopter rides and things. Now, this was long before he was ever on television. This was in January or February, so it was about 2 or 3 months before he was on television. But any opportunity Donal got during those months, he took.
And you say he affected a whole lot of people as well, but he also had the support of a great bunch of pals are, what, now 20, 21?
They are. They're 21 and 2 now, and they're all moving on with their lives. They're just finishing up in college, I say, doing their final year exams this year, a lot of them. One or two have gone on to welding courses in the ESB and different things, but... They're all doing very well for themselves. They all call quite often and eat me out of house and home. But he had great support from them. But he was very good to them as well. And he always said to them, you know, he used to say, pray to me now and I'll look out for you. I'll do what I can now. I'll do what I can, but keep praying to me. So he had no fear of dying. He had no fear of where he was going. He just so wanted to.
Where did that faith come from in a 16-year-old?
Sometimes I ask myself that question. We weren't an over-religious family, in all honesty. We weren't a family that said the rosary or anything like that at night. But he'd often say when he was in Crumlin, come on now, Mum, we'll say the rosary. And he liked the rosary. He liked the repetitiveness and, I suppose, the place it took him to. I honestly believe he was a simple faith, a very, very simple faith, nothing deep. But it was deep in its sincerity. And he believed everything, you know. He had no fear of dying. Like the priest asked him when he was being anointed, the priest said, Donal, are you afraid of dying? And Donal's reply was, no, Father, just a little nervous. And he was only nervous of the transition between life and death. But at the same time, he just so wanted to live and travel the world and bungee jump and do all the things that every other child would get the chance to do.
Rugby played a role for him in his life too.
It did. And I suppose one of the biggest shocks for Donal when he was 12 wasn't the fact that he got cancer. It was the fact that he had his leg replaced with titanium. And part of his leg replaced with titanium, and he could never again play an impact sport. And that devastated him. But in fairness, he coached rugby. He went and did the coaching courses, and he coached the Tralee rugby team to great Westminster success. And you know, his team were 13, Donal was 15, and they showed him great respect and everything during the thing, and signs by that they won all their games. So, yeah, he never left rugby go. And in fairness to Munster rugby, as well as everybody knows, they never left him go either. You know, any time that they were in town, if they did a run through Munster or anything like that, they'd always stop off and bring Donal up to the club and include him in the barbecues and different things. And, you know, I suppose the biggest compliment they paid Donal was they rang and said that would we mind if some of them came to the funeral? There was a few cars of them coming down. And we said, not at all, you know, you're more than welcome. But I think the biggest mark of respect that they gave was Donal's funeral started at 11 o'clock in the morning. And we didn't leave the church until 4 o'clock that afternoon. And the Munster rugby team stood by his coffin, never once moving during all that length of time. And I thought, oh my God, like, how are they standing there all that time? Even I was wrecked. And I was meeting people, and, you know, like the people were filing past us and things like that. But they stood there, not a budge out of them. So in fairness, Ronan O'Gara, Paul O'Connell, they've written in their books a chapter or so about Donal and the impact that he had on them, which is amazing to think that a 16-year-old boy could have an impact on legends like them.
Around the time of a death and around a funeral, there's so much support for the family. But in the period afterwards, in the 5 years afterwards, I'm thinking for somebody like you, where Donal seemed to just shine out so much positivity, what was there room for you ever to get angry or really annoyed and cross about this whole scenario?
Yeah, to be honest with you, I think for the first year, for the first 12 months, I think I went to bed crying and I woke up crying. It was devastating that he was gone from our lives. The finality of it was the most devastating part, that he was gone from our lives, that we'd never have him back again. And it was baby stages, in all honesty. You know, I remember them, for example, I suppose the one that I give in schools is when they ask me is the morning that he went to the church. I felt so guilty and it felt so wrong to be going for a shower and having breakfast, that he should be doing that. And that felt horrible to do that. It was like I was betraying him in an odd way. And then from that day on, it was baby steps. You know, you'd look back a week later and you'd say, God, I've improved a bit in last week. And you'd look on a month later and you'd say, God, I'm in a better place than I was before. And that's the way it was for me, you know. And it went on like that for maybe 2 years. But of course, nobody wants to see you crying. And nobody, you know, you can only cry for so long, and you can only, you know, talk about things for so long. People get sick of it after a while.
Does it rattle your faith?
It did, yes, at the beginning. I got very, very cross and very angry, very cross. But I suppose the thing that held me together with my faith, and thankfully it did, because it's a great help to me now, was that Donal's own faith is what held me together. I said, if he had the courage to believe in God when he knew that he was dying a slow and painful death, you know, what have I got? You know, what have I got to be cross about or anything like that? Because he knew what his death sentence was going to be. And I suppose I took strength from Donal, in all honesty.
5 years later, you're still meeting young people of Donal's age. Does that freeze time a little for you? That, you know, when you go into a school, you're talking to people in that transition year, in their 15, 16 years of age.
Yeah, it does a bit, because you still see, Donal will forever be 16, obviously. But you do see his friends coming now, and they're big and broad, and they have beards, and they have girlfriends, and they've, you know, they're driving and different things that they're doing, that they're growing up. And sometimes it kind of be taken back, and you say, God, I wonder what would he be like? Would he be like one of them, or, you know, what would he be like today? He'd definitely be cracked anyway, but and then going to the schools and seeing the 16-year-olds there, I'm all right until I go to an all-boys school. But when I go to an all-boys school, then it really hits home that, you know, he could be in the middle of them. He could be one of them. In any school that you've gone to, in a boys' school, he could be any one of them, like, in there. And you could be talking to himself, literally, because they're all the same as him, and he was the same as the rest of them.
Anna, the event in Knock, which will be on RTÉ1 television and on radio, actually, on the 13th of May, is an anniversary mass, the fifth anniversary mass. What was the thinking and the idea behind that?
Well, I suppose originally, Donal's first anniversary, we didn't do anything. We didn't ask anybody to it, or we didn't want to make people feel pressurised to go there or anything like that. We felt if people wanted to be there, they'd be there, and that was it. But unknown to us, there was a lot of schools. We were really thrown by the amount of schools that turned up that day, and honoured and humbled, to be honest with you. So the following year, then I decided, you know, maybe we should make it into youth mass, and maybe we should invite schools. So I suppose I got my act together after Christmas, and I started asking schools would they be interested, and they said yes. And then I said, oh my God, I need a good speaker. So I had met and heard the then Papal Nuncio Charles Brown, and I said, you know something, I'll just ask him. So I asked him, and he said yes, and I was nearly stunned, and I said, oh my God, this is going to go ahead. So he came down, and we had lovely music, we had food for the kids after, they had a great conversation with him after and everything, and it was very, very positive. So he asked me that day, would I consider having his fifth anniversary mass at Knock? And to be honest with you, I thought he was mad. And I went to Nicola at Knock and Father Richard, hoping that they would say, no, you're mad. And no, they didn't. They said the same, that to have it there. So it's going ahead.
Well, joining us on the line from the RTÉ studios in Galway is Nicola Mitchell, who's Director of Knock Youth Ministry in County Mayo. Nicola, welcome to the programme.
Thank you.
Well, before we chat to you, let's actually hear from two of the schools who will be in Knock: Scolwira in Clane in County Kildare, and Manor House Raheny in County Dublin.
My name is Mark Foran. I am a sixth-year student in Scolwira, Clane, County Kildare. Last year, in fifth year, Donal Walsh's mother came to visit us to give us a talk about and tell about his story. And to be honest, I have never heard such stunned silence in an assembly hall like that ever. To say it was awe-inspiring, shocking, was an understatement. Donal Walsh gave everyone kind of hope, despite like the circumstances that, you know, he was going through, how like he kept pushing forward and like lived his life to the full and gave it everything. And I think that's a good message for everyone. Like, no matter what life throws at you, whether it be exams or whether it be other unfortunate circumstances, I think that everyone has a way of getting out of it and not let any of that stuff bring you down.
My name is Jenny O'Reilly, and I'm in transition year in Manor House in Dublin. We've mostly been talking about his message, you know, that like suicide, particularly in young people, shouldn't be seen as like an option. And I think one of the things he said was, you know, suicide is like a permanent solution for a temporary problem, which is kind of like really kind of hits home, I'd say, because it is true. And obviously, you know, it is important to recognise, you know, people with mental health issues, they are in a different mental place to people who don't have mental health issues. But like, it's important to remember that there is help.
My name is Calum Linney. I'm a fifth year student in Scolwira, Clane, County Kildare. And this year, Donal Walsh's father came in to speak with 50 year students about his story, and to say that there was some tears is an understatement, because pretty much everyone else in the room was quite full of sorrow after hearing the story. And his father was telling stories about him just before he passed on and how he was trying to make the most of the time he had left with his friends. And I thought it was so inspirational for someone who had such a short life, lived it to the fullest.
My name is Leanne Barrett. I'm a six-year student in Scoomer, Clane, County Kildare. Last year, Donal Walters' mum came in to talk to us about his story and his poetry and like his message in life. I went to the anniversary mass last year. I thought it was incredible. Like, I nearly started bawling, and I just thought it was amazing. The choir, the service, the priest, everything was just put together amazingly, and like even the crowd there, like, it was huge. So I'd be expecting kind of the same thing this year, but even better, of course.
Alma, your reaction to hearing some of those young people who have actually heard your presentation and your husband's presentation?
Yeah, sure. Look, you have to be honoured that they listened, that they took it in, and they took it on board. They took the message well on board. You know, I suppose the one thing that stands out to me is that they want to experience their faith. That's why they're going to Knock. And this is a very busy world for teenagers today. And they now realise that they want to set that time aside for their faith. Like, I honestly don't think that we'll get the full churches that we used to have anymore. That's not going to happen in Ireland or anywhere, I don't think, anymore. But they want a way still of expressing and experiencing their faith.
Nicola, they've fairly well put it up to you about what their expectations are for the event.
Fairly feeling the pressure, all right.
So what have you lined up?
Well, we've a great day lined up for the 11th of May. We have a number of speakers. I suppose the most prominent one and the most ones the young people are getting most excited about, if I'm to be honest, is Joe Schmidt, the Irish rugby coach. So he's going to come and he's going to speak about what it means for him to live life to the full. We are so honoured to have Ian McKinley as well, who is a rugby player who, I suppose, you know, he's a great example of how a person can really overcome difficult circumstances. Ian was injured a number of years ago. He got a cog in the eye and he lost the vision in one of his eyes. But that didn't deter him. He kept working and he did his research, and he's now playing for Italy using specially manufactured goggles that allow him to play. So Ian is going to come and give his story to the young people and also spend the whole day, I suppose, meeting and greeting with them and answering any questions.
And we had the pleasure of having his dad Horace on the programme not too long ago that story. So it was particularly there. Now, there's also Father Dermot Donnelly.
Yes, Father Dermot Donnelly, I'm sure you're familiar with Aunt and Deck.
Indeed.
And Saturday Night Takeaway. Dermot is Declan's brother. He's a very, very busy man. As well as being a priest, he works in schools and he heads up a youth village in Newcastle. And he's also the dean to the cathedral in Newcastle upon Tyne. So he's going to come and he's the homilist for the mass on the day. So he's going to come and really encourage, I suppose, young people to look at their faith, to ask the question, where is God in my life? So it's set to be an amazing day, and it's something really, really special, but it couldn't be any other way because of the people that are involved and because of the message and the life that it's celebrating of Donal himself, you know, a truly, truly inspirational young man. And, you know, I suppose it's our hope in Knock for the day that we celebrate his life, we celebrate his message, but we also give young people a chance to come away, hear that message and leave Knock knowing that they're loved by a wider community, but essentially that they're loved by God.
I have a sense as well, Nicola, that you know, a young audience like that won't bear any waffle. In other words, they're going to be checking you guys out. Yes. On the authenticity of everything that you're offering. I think another one of the speakers you have is Father Philip Mulryan as well. He's got an interesting story to tell.
Yes, Father Philip used to play for Man United. So he was living the dream, as any young person might think. You know, he was wealthy, he had fame. But when you hear his story, he really wasn't happy with that. And he found himself, you know, really searching in life. And it's really amazing to hear, you know, he left that life to answer God's call.
What's the energy like at an event like this?
Crazy. It's amazing. I always say the work up, I get so nervous and kind of as you do if you're planning any event. But on the day, if you could just bottle that energy. Our young people are amazing and they have so much to offer.
Nicola, how specifically are you remembering Donal on the day?
I suppose his message is ingrained in every aspect of the day. But We're going to have one room dedicated solely to Donal himself. And the room we're calling In Memory of Donal. And it's going to have Donal's family and friends there. And it's going to have his writings all around the room for students to come in and just spend that time reading his poetry, reading everything he wrote. And we'll also have his interviews streaming as well in the room. So it's a place where young people can go and really learn more about Donal and learn more about his message. And then the Mass at 1:30, celebrated by the Papal Nuncio, Archbishop Okolo. That's where we'll celebrate Donal's life. And we're going to finish the Mass and essentially finish the day hearing the words of Donal himself. His poem, Mountains, is going to be read out by one of the students. So I think it really is such a special way to finish, hopefully, what's going to be an amazing day.
He found some solace in writing and poetry.
He did. He liked writing. And, you know, after he died, about a year after he died, we found two other songs that he had written. And but the two ones that came to prominence are about his struggle, I suppose, accepting that he had cancer and living with it. And he described it as climbing a mountain. Like, this was his mountain that God gave him to climb. I'm climbing God's mountain, he said. And he wrote, I've climbed God's mountain and faced many struggles for my life and dealt with so much loss. And as much as I'd love to go around to every fool on this planet and open their eyes to the mountains that surround them in life, I can't. But maybe if I shout for mine, they'll pay attention. So that's part of what he wrote. And I suppose it just gave him comfort, and that's what he enjoyed doing.
Emma Walsh, thank you very much indeed for joining us on
You're
The Leap of Faith.
Welcome.
And Nicola Mitchell in our Galway studios. It will indeed be a fascinating event, and you can see the Mass and the Anniversary Mass on RTE1 television. It'll be broadcast on the 13th of May at 11 o'clock on RTE1 television, and a simulcast on RTE Radio 1 Extra on Longwave 252 and on the digital platforms. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And that's The Leap of Faith for this week, and indeed for the current season. We'll be back with you again in the autumn. And in the meantime, if you'd like to listen back to any of the programmes or indeed get information on the Mass and bookings for it, you'll find the information on the Leap of Faith webpage, which is at rte.ie/leapoffaith. From all of us on the programme, goodbye.